This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome to Enterprise. My name is Rich Bradbury. Bit of a full house today. I'm going to have to go around and introduce everybody. Starting over here, I have Mr.
Jeff Sandu.
Over here we have
Frida Liu,
Christine Wong,
Majida Hashim,
Arvind Yabaraj.
Right, guys, why are we all in the studio today? What's going on? Christine?
You tell us.
All right, fine. What we're doing is, of course, it is coming to the end of the year. And what better way of, establishing that year that was by looking back at some of our favorite moments from that year. So we have a bunch of interviews that we've kind of curated to look back at some of our favorite pieces from this year. We've got stuff from The Last Great Explorer. We're going to have a little clip from him a little bit later on. Jeff, you've got something to do with digital highways that we'll be looking at. Pioneers is coming from Arvind, way back in one of the interviews you did back in October. Mm-hmm. And then we have leadership skills from Christine. That's all coming up a little bit later on. And of course, Majida has some entrepreneur founder stories and a big long train ride. So let's start off, Christine. First off, you had an interview not too long ago all about Leaders Ready Now. What is this?
Yeah, so this is one of my favorite interviews that I did over the time that I've been here. And it was with Matt Pace, who is the co-author of Leaders Ready Now, and it was all about the concept of leadership readiness, and I really liked what he had to say about the concept of being ready for something.
It's not thinking of ready as a place where you end up. It's a place where you demonstrate that you're preparing to do something different.
It's almost like readiness is almost a state of mind, I guess.
Well said. Exactly.
Ah.
Yeah, so what I really liked about that is it's all the little things, you know. The things that I kind of wanted to talk about today are what I learned and what I think a lot of the people listening, budding entrepreneurs could also learn from the interviews that were done this year. And that was such a small thing, to think of being ready as not a goal to reach, but a kind of state of mind, was something that I had never considered before. And the moment he said it, I was like, oh, it makes sense.
And when he said it, exactly, you know.
I mean, it's like, always good to get some validation.
I knew that.
You know, yeah. So That was really good. But I also found it interesting about, you know, the effect that bad leadership can also have on a company as well. I did a really fascinating interview with Mark Lovett, who is the CEO of Trident Integrity, for our Anti-Corruption Day feature. And while we did talk about corruption as an issue as well, it boiled down to this concept of organizational health and how leadership can affect that.
If there are things going on in the company that turn people off, immediately you lose that buy-in. So if you do, for example, a staff survey and you ask these questions, do you believe in the company? Do you feel strongly that this is where you should be and the results are poor? It means that there's something not quite right. And I think in terms of the impact that corruption has is if your boss is on the take and is exploiting his position, then of course you're not going to trust him. You're not going to give your all. And one thing that we see happening with corrupted companies is often smart people recognize the signs.
Yeah, so I really just found it fascinating that the smallest difference can make the biggest change when it comes to leadership. You can be a good leader and you can understand things like the concept of leadership readiness, but you can be a bad leader and lead your company down a path that you may not be able to come back from. So I learned a lot this year from these kinds of people.
He also sounded more northern than I do, which was really interesting, right, Frida?
No, yeah? we did talk about that. He was like, "Yes, I am northern." I could tell. Thank you.
Okay, that was great though. Moving on swiftly along to Arvind. Arvind, we all know you're a big movie buff, so who did you speak to in October? Who were these guys?
In October, I did this Halloween special. So I called up these guys called Distortions Unlimited. They make props and costumes and masks and stuff for theme parks and haunted houses. These guys, they don't say it much, so they're quite modest, but they are a married couple, husband and wife, Ed and Marsha Edmonds. And they sort
Wait,
of...
Wait, his name is Ed Edmonds?
Yeah, his name is Ed Edmonds.
Wow.
And she's Marsha Edmonds. They pioneered the whole, the animatronic stuff that you see in the haunted houses and all. Back in the 80s, I think, what they did was they put a motor inside one of these wax figures in an electric chair thing. And it started to shake like so violently and stuff, and it frightened people. And then their sales went through the roof.
Wow.
Yeah, because everybody wanted it. So they basically pioneered all the animatronic machine, mechanical stuff that you see in like haunted houses and stuff. So I asked them how, like in between like the zombies and the ghouls and the blood and the gore, they managed to find love, and this is what they had to say.
We used to paint a room full of masks together, so there'd be like, what, how many masks in the room? Like,
I think we had 164 or something upstairs.
So there'd be these masks in the room, and we'd start the day, and we'd paint the masks, and So you have the music going and just talking, and back in the day we had much more time, and so more time than we have now, you know, and so we'd we'd take long lunches and this and that. So yeah, just working together.
Yeah, you know, it's really kind of a funny world we live in, because we have all these bloody, gory, scary creatures, and then we have this, you know, this relationship, this marriage, love relationship intertwined with all this. But, you know, it works well, because we look at it a little differently. We're not scared of it. These monsters are works of art. They're our friends. We traveled all over the world with these things. I don't know. It's really kind of delightful to mix relationship and monsters. It's fun. We have a lot of exciting things happen, and I assume you know that we did a TV show for several years, and we just had opportunities to meet amazing people. We've done a lot of work for Alice Cooper, and we just had Tom Savini out the studio last week. It's really been kind of a wonderful life with ourselves and monsters.
Relationships and monsters.
Yeah. You know what the worst part is? The best part is they don't like horror movies.
At all?
Yeah, at all. They like comedy horror movies.
Right.
Yeah, so they look at their monsters like these fantasy, like gimmick things. They don't look at them like actual horror. Someone asked them to design something that looked like an actual person back in the 90s, I think, and then they refused. They said they won't blend like real life and their fantasy part of it. So.
Interesting to see that they've worked alongside people like Alice Cooper, who clearly has that image of, I'm going to scare you guys to death.
Yeah, no, but Alice Cooper is still like Evil Dead kind of,
funny silly,
horror
funny
kind
stuff,
of, silly stuff. So it was quite nice talking to them. Very
right.
Nice.
So then you did another one about showing what Photoshop can do, and this is a really interesting little clip.
Yeah, so this one, Jeff actually helped me set up this interview with Bert Monroy. So he was one of the pioneers who figured out digital art on Photoshop. They call him a hyper-realistic artist. So back in the 80s, he was using his hands to paint, like he was a manual painter. But then once the Macintosh came, he started to use it, and then he figured out Photoshop. Photoshop didn't know what Photoshop could do. He helped them figure out how much they could do, and they still hire him to be like their testers. He basically figures out like what new features and functions will be on like new versions of Photoshop. He still does it to this day. I spoke with him actually because I used to do freelancing and graphic design back when I was in college, and to know that this is one of the people who put all those functions in and made it easier for me to make money back in college and school and stuff, so that was nice. I told him that one of the requests I got from clients was somebody gave me like a 2D picture of an elephant, and then they said, can you use Photoshop to show me what the front of the elephant would look like?
What?
Yeah.
Because that's definitely how Photoshop works.
Yeah, so it was a 2D. I remember it's like this this safari picture kind of thing. You can see like the elephant's butt, and then they're like, can you just use Photoshop to show me what the face of the elephant looks like? I'm like, no. So I asked him what's the weirdest request that he got from clients, and he said this.
Well, I'll tell you a weird job that I had. I was given a detective came to me, and they gave me a picture of a child, and they said, can you show me what that child would look like at the age of 50? Mm-hmm. So it's like I have to start to imagine things and try to study facial structure. The reason was that there was a family who had a lot of money, and there was this child, that a sibling that had been lost a long time ago, and this person had shown up saying that, you know, they were the rightful heirs to this thing. So I had to go in there and start, you know, doing some facial reconstruction and trying to figure out how, you know, so I studied a lot of people at that age, you know, and see how they, their faces had changed and stuff. So I then created an illustration based on the child's restructuring the face to make it look like it was 50 years old. And I never got to meet the person or see the person afterwards, but it was the detective, when I gave him the illustration, they said, oh, this is incredible. This is the person. It looked like the person who was saying who they were. Mm-hmm. So that was the weirdest one, because I had to use my imagination to create something that wasn't there. Of course, I had a little more structure. I had eyes and a nose, and I didn't have a trunk and tusks and stuff looking at an elephant butt and trying to figure out what the face looks like. But that was, I would say, one of the strangest things I ever got.
I see he got an elephant reference in there as well.
Yeah. Because I told him about that story about trying to look for the face of the elephant and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, he has a painting called Times Square, which is his most detailed painting. It even has like details of the nuts and bolts on like railings and stuff on the subway, the stairs that go down to the subway. Mm. And what he wants to do next is he wants to do VR stuff so you can actually walk into one of his paintings.
Wow.
Yeah, so he wants to use Photoshop and have a painting, but then you can literally like walk into one of his like,
can you imagine
digital
that?
Painting. Yeah. So he's working on, I think he should start next year. He told
right.
Me. Yeah.
Great clip so far. When we come back then, we have a little bit of a clip from the world's last great explorer, Mr. Mike Horn. He won't be quite here in the studio, but he has been here already, right, Frieda?
He has.
You know you loved this interview, didn't you?
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
He just read questions and he's got all the stories.
That's the perfect interview, right? One question done. Right. We're going to take a short break. Some music coming up from Twisted Sister. And if you want to get in touch with the show, as per usual, we are on Twitter at BFM Radio, or of course on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We're right back in just a few minutes. BFM 89.9.
Best for money. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise. If you're only just tuning in this morning, what we're doing is looking back at some of our favorite moments of 2017, some of our favorite interviews. We've already had Christine and Arvin talk about theirs first. Christine, just quickly tell people what it was that you just did.
Just discussed what I learned about leadership skills when I talked to two different people.
Yeah, and Arvin?
Ed and Marsha Edmonds from Distortions Unlimited and Bert Monroy, who's a hyper-realistic artist.
And elephant butts.
Yeah. And elephant butts,
yeah. Elephant
somebody
butts.
Had to get... I'm not even going to carry on. Right. Speaking about things of the unusual, right. Frieda, you met and spoke with one of the world's last great explorers.
Right.
Yeah. How was that experience?
Well, he's very interesting. I mean, if you just look at his bio, right, and just go to Wikipedia and the things that he's done, right? I mean, how has he lived through all this? And it was such an easy interview done because he's really how he was just close to death and he had someone standing next to him who was shot dead and he was next in line.
Wow.
So you can just start with all these stories about him because he's traversed the North Pole and now he's onto the South Pole all by himself and his GoPro, I guess, and just what he's done in the last, 20 plus years. But I think what really stuck for me was the softer side, if I may say so. And then of course I started tearing because he talked about his late wife, and it was, I didn't want to bring it up because it was, I didn't know whether it was a sensitive thing because he just died about 2 years ago. So I talked about parenting because he's got two grown up girls, but have a listen to how that went.
I think just losing my wife 2.5 years ago from of breast cancer, a lot of people might think it's sad, but I was just thankful for having 25 great years with her. And we cannot be sad about things that you don't have and will never have. You can just be thankful for what you had. And because she was the person that gave me the freedom to do what I do as an explorer, made me understand that if you love somebody, you've got to be able to give somebody the freedom to go out there and be who they are. Mm. And if they love you enough, they'll come back alive. So the love that I was given by my family made me come back alive. I wanted to see them again. And that was a good insurance policy. And the moment that was close to her death, I just said to her, I would like to, in a way, I would like to die for you. If I could change, I'll give you my life and I'll die for you. And she looked at me and she said, Mike, you know how to live. Don't die for me, live for me. And at that moment, you can understand the wisdom of the woman that was next to me, supporting me. And if you have that support around you, then obviously you base your life on good values. Mm. So my daughters got these values from their father and from their mother. A father is not just somebody that goes to work and comes back every evening, and most of the time his kids are asleep. Mm. A father like me that's never at home is not really a good father. But to me, a father is somebody that gives something special to his kids, that the kids can say, that is my father. Right. because this is what it gives me. It's not buying them a computer or an iPad or a bicycle that makes you a good father, taking them on holidays and stuff like that. Any man can do that to any kid.
Right.
But you must be able to give something to your kids that's unique, that bonds them through their intellectual emotions with you. When they think of a man, they've got to think of somebody that gave them something that they can only find with that person.
Hmm.
And that's what I did with my daughters.
Very different principles to child raising, right?
Mm.
But very, and you know, the daughters are very close to him. They manage his online media and all.
Oh, do
that.
They?
Yeah, they do. And to just to hear that, and of course, that's when I burst out crying quietly in the background, as I just cry the drop of a hat. But just and I don't know, because he's been away from the family for 5 years at one time. Right, and to be able to have that kind of relationship with the kids, that's quite amazing.
Right. Yeah. The interesting thing is when he acknowledged, you know, I'm not a good father in the general or the well-known sense of being a good father.
Mm.
And for him to say something like that was quite touching as well.
Right. And then just to hear his wife said, you know, outlive for me.
Mm.
Right. So, wow.
Majida, I know you went to see him speak, right?
Yeah, so I went to see him speak when he was here and there was a lot of people. And what's different is that it's in a hall where he has these pictures, and he started the presentation going, I got 100 photos. And the thing about it is that every photo is a celebration of life, and every photo that he takes with his daughters, especially, everybody's smiling, everybody has got their arms around each other and things. It's so happy.
Mm.
And there is this one photo that stood out, which is as he is sailing. So he circumnavigated the world on a ship, and there is this pictures of his daughter at this pier, and it is just as the boat sails away and they're both waving off at the dad, and he says that this is not a sad moment, this is like the happiest moment, because now they're waiting for him to come back, and because of that he has an obligation, it's a responsibility to come back. And that is such a beautiful thing to see.
Right, we're going to have to take a very short break. We've got some music coming up from Edwyn Collins with A Girl Like You, nice and appropriate. When we come back, a little bit from Mr. Jeff Sandu, he's going to be talking to us about digital highways or driving on a digital highway. Jordan Schlipf from Rainmaking Innovation. That's all coming up after these messages. Do not go anywhere. You are listening to Enterprise here on BFM 89.9.
Because feelings matter. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise. My name is Rich Bradbury. We have a full house in the studio. We've got Arvind Yuvaraj over here. We have Majida Hashim. We have Christine Wong. We have Frida Liu. And of course, we have Mr. Jeff Sandu, who unusually, up until this point, has been so quiet. Jeff,
yes.
Is there something wrong with
no,
you?
No, I just want to give full credit to all the clips that we've played so far. Even the ads are, you know, playing along as well. Really good
that
clips.
That little
so
clip,
far.
Then just there, I saw you like react to the.
Love it.
Water evaporates.
Love it.
And so does love.
Absolutely love it.
Right. Yeah. Well, what are you going to be talking about then today? What was your favorite interview?
Yeah, so like, you know, it's really hard to pick a great interview, like something that's memorable, especially when you have a person like Karamjit Singh who comes in once or twice a month, and you know, every time he opens his mouth is just like, oh my god, it's a really hard thing to handle. I just ask Frida, right? Like, she will tell you all about, you know, handling a person like Karam, but there's like so many great stories from him. And then I've also managed to interview the US Department of Justice. He's like the cyber security researcher here, and he's based here in KL. And this is the first time America has actually, you know, created a job like this, and he's based in Malaysia. It was just like, wow, what's going on here? Mm. Some cyber espionage kind of thing. And then Arvind went for one of those Kaspersky getaway, cyber espionage getaways as well. Like one
did
of those
the Russians
James Bonds
it?
Kind of thing.
Yeah, they say no.
They say no, right, okay.
They say no.
And then this year's been the dark web, the year of the dark web. We see so many great stories. I've done a couple of interviews about how the dark web is just, you know, grown into this really big giant that has so much of innovation that we take for granted. And you hear some of the examples, you just go, ooh, goosebumps, you know, it's just so many things to pick out.
We had WannaCry and all that kind of stuff this year as well.
Yeah, like everything became popular. Remember even, I think last year, there was just a hint of what's going to happen with autonomous vehicles when one of the Wired magazine editors, you know, hacked into a car. Now we see Teslas on the road, and you know, we even see it here in Malaysia. You go like, hey, wow, it's a nice thing to see, and it's only a matter of time before it becomes on the radar of these cyber criminals and stuff. And then it's also like year of Kickstarter. Me and Matt, we've done a whole year of King of the Crowd or Down in the Dumps. If it's something that is worth investing in a Kickstarter project, it's, you know, King of the Crowd. If it's something just completely useless, Down in the Dumps. There have been some really good innovations as well this year. There's so many chats I've done about how you find that growth hacking ability, because nowadays if you surf social media on Facebook, you are bound to come across some crowdfunding, some Kickstarter project, and it's like, you know, one of the best in the world, it hits X amount of records. These are all growth hacking methods. It's not viral as you think it is. You know, we all just take it for granted. We're like, oh, it must be one of these ads. But it's actually very targeted, and how the inner webs work will freak you out. And, you know, me and Matt have done so many shows about that. I've even spoken to growth hackers themselves, AI, me and you and, you know, the whole team. We've talked about AI on BizBytes. But I think I'm going to pick out a clip with an individual that I had a chat with. He was so good that he came on twice because we didn't have enough time to cover on the first episode. And, you know, this year we've seen so many accelerator programs, hackathons, you know, all these big, large companies that are trying to innovate themselves because they're being disrupted, right? So they spin off smaller companies to try to disrupt their own selves. But most of the time, you see, it doesn't quite work. Like, yes, they host an accelerator program and they award a winner. And then what happens, right? We haven't really seen much. Whenever we talk about, oh, great Malaysian technology companies, we still go to the Grabs and the, you know, the service heroes. Like, there hasn't been any spark yet, right? So why so? And Jordan Schilf, he's from Rainmaking Innovation. They are a whole bunch of young entrepreneurs who've invested in so many different companies around the world, and they are now helping, you know, all these large companies to take a different look and a different approach. So I asked him this question, and this is probably like the favorite response I've ever received from a question that I asked on air, and just enjoy. It's 3 minutes of him going on this route of failure. Have a listen.
If you are on a company payroll, there's a big gulf between, even if you've been trained on how to do lean startup, so you know what you should do. And then you say, okay, the CEO's there and everyone's telling them, fail fast, be entrepreneurial, innovate. And then you watch what they should do versus what they do do. And what they do do versus what they should do is a massive gulf. Why? It's not because they don't have the capabilities or they haven't been trained. It's because they are thinking deep down, consciously or unconsciously, what happens when I do fail? What happens to all the people to me on this project when I kill it? Who report to me? What happens to my bonus? What happens to my remuneration? What happens to my prospects in this firm? Will they really reward this failure? And if there is any doubt in that, they will not do it. So the path of emotional least resistance is what all human beings will take. So when you compare that to versus what they should do, the scenario here is, if the path of emotional least resistance is not genuinely fail fast, they won't fail fast. So there's this concept around this where it doesn't matter how many times people say it, the lip service versus the company actually rewarding them. So when you sit there, say whether it's an X-like entity, not specific to DigiX, but like an X-like entity, they're doing a startup idea, and then 6 months in, 3 months in, they figure out it doesn't really work, it's not really going to deliver what they want, their resources are better spent elsewhere. So they kill it. Does their parent, does the mothership bonus them for that? Like, literally cash, I don't know, give them a two-week holiday. Do they celebrate them? Does the culture, in terms of not what people say, but what behaviors get rewarded? What behaviors get rewarded, not just monetarily, but like through social rewards? Like, do people clap them and high-five them? Do people nod them and go, that's awesome what you've done? Because when we do this so we've done this before. We spent a couple of years building startup studios or sort of startup builders, company builders, because that was our background within corporates. We won't do it anymore. The reason being is the amount of times I had to take a team on stage after 3 or 6 months, they've killed, and you can't tell them to kill their idea. They have to do it. It is not acceptable to have some investment committee or some, you know, exec co come in and say, oh, I think your idea is terrible, I'm going to kill it. Because they don't have the capabilities to judge this early stage stuff, FYI. But besides that, like, that's so demoralizing. It needs to come from the team itself. If the team doesn't have the autonomy to kill their own idea, then you're not really innovating. And even if they do, the scenario here is I used to take these teams, put them on stage to the rest, 80 other people, hold them up and said, guys, listen up. This team has done more to further innovation in the last quarter than any of you. And they're like, what? By killing their idea, they've done more to further innovation. And they go nuts. They're like, they don't understand this. Despite how many months and years the organization, the senior people have been saying, fail fast. So the truth around it is we just don't believe in that anymore. So that's why we provide the proven entrepreneurs. We'll run the startup, but we now connect it using our corporate innovation experience to start with an unfair advantage and not just a blank canvas. Mm. So how do you get the best of big and the best of small? Well, that's our Rainmaking Ventures, and that's where we'll come to you and work on strategic ideas, strategically aligned ideas, but we provide that entrepreneurial muscle, and you allow us to leverage your existing infrastructure and resources. Mm. And that way, we outcompete startups.
Did that alter the way in which you think about innovation startups?
No, well, it just kind of alters the way a lot of people would celebrate failure. We don't celebrate failure, and that's a big part. Like, we always talk about, you know, we've done a lot of networking series that's based on innovation, and I've actually asked that same question as well. Like, what do they do when a team fails or when you push a team so much so that they actually found routes that you should not venture into? What happens to them? And, you know, most of them actually take a very normal approach, which is like, yeah, it doesn't work, never mind, you know, kill it, shut it off. But you don't actually, you know, use that as like a tool to know, like, hey, and actually, you know, it's right. Like, these guys who you know, spend so much of investment in terms of their own skills to reach to that goal and only to fail, it has to be, you know, acknowledged, like, hey, all right, like, you know, pivot to something else or do something. We don't celebrate failure. That's the thing that, you know, hopefully we will change in 2018. And then maybe, you know, we may see new stuff.
All right. We have to take a very short break. We've got some music coming up from Blondie with Maria. But when we do come back, Majid Hashim will be giving us some entrepreneur founder stories, specifically about a bathtub and a train ride. Right? Yeah, I'm getting nods from over there. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after these messages. And if you do want to get in touch, don't forget we are on Twitter at BFM Radio or on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We'll be right back in just a few minutes. BFM 89.9.
Bigotry Free Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise. If you're only just joining us, it is our Enterprise 2017 look back. We've been looking back at some of our favorite interviews from this year. Frida had Mike Horn, a little bit of a chat with him. We had Digital Highways from Jeff. Arvin was talking about pioneers and distortions and monsters and all that kind of stuff, and a little bit of Photoshop. And of course, Elephant What?
Elephant butts.
Elephant butts, yeah. Christine spoke to us about leadership skills. Now, Majida, I know you have a couple of really, really interesting stories here. First, you spoke to the lady who created the burkini, right?
Yeah. So this is the clip that I got for. I spoke to her on her Vantage. It's an interview I did with Ahida Zanetti, and she's the creator of the burkini. Mm. Now, burkini, if people have not heard yet, it's a conservative female swimwear. And in this clip, she tells me about how she tested her very first prototype burkini.
The first testing done was in my bathtub.
And it worked, right?
And it worked. Yeah. And I remember my children, like, they were only very, very young. They're just staring at me going, you know, not too many words. I think the eldest one was probably about four or five, four. And she's going, what are you doing, Mom? You know? I just wanted to make sure that, you know, when I was soaking with the water, that when I got out, I wasn't going to feel very heavy. Mm. So it wasn't only the aspect of the design. It needed to be light in weight. You know, it is a swimsuit as it is, has, you know, that's a little bit, you know, roomy, that I wanted to make sure that she wasn't going to drown in it.
Someone that she's comfortable wearing in the first place, right?
Yes, she's comfortable wearing it. Wet or dry. So, yeah, there was a lot of... And after the bathtub, I drove to our local pool, and it was really strange. It was very strange. And that was Roselands Pools. And so I drove over there one afternoon, and I walked all the way, and you could see everyone staring at me. Like, they're trying to understand, who am I? What am I doing? What am I wearing? You know, it was a little bit different. If they said that it was like a wetsuit of some kind, it still didn't look like a wetsuit. Mm. You know, it still, and if it was a wetsuit, it wasn't in the right place of the swimming pool. So it was still, they're trying to work out. So they all, I could see them at the back of my, you know, in the corner of my eye, that people were staring at me, and I made sure that I did the whole movement, you know, I walked in with confidence, you know. I wasn't confident, but I wanted to actually go right at the back and dive on that diving board, and I wanted to feel how it was going to be like diving into the water, making sure that my headband or my cap was not going to fall off. And that's what I did. I went straight to the back, sat and stood on the
diving board, yeah.
And I dived in. I dived in really hard. And it did not fall off. So that was the two testing.
She's quite a character, right?
Yeah, if she sounded like a machi, it is because she really is a machi. And the producers around here know I actually swoon over Ahida. She is this machi with so much energy. And can you imagine this machi sitting in a bathtub, right?
Right, right. I can actually imagine that. You know, the way she describes, I can imagine the kids walking and going, "Mom, what are you doing?"
Yeah. You know? So the second clip I have is an interview with a Swedish lady named Emily Ekbert, who started a social enterprise in Africa called The Saga. Just a quick context, Emily had this nice cushy job in Microsoft in Stockholm, and then she met a boy.
Uh-oh.
And together,
it always starts like that, right?
So together they planned to go and see the world. So she quit her job and she sold her house and everything, and they set out on a backpack to go and see the world.
We get about a week into that travel, and we have just stepped on board the Trans-Siberian Railroad, mm-hmm. which, for those who haven't done it or haven't heard about it, is a train that slowly, slowly makes its way from Moscow to Beijing, or there are three main routes, but mm-hmm. that was the one we were. So we step on board of this, and about a day and a half into this, he gets cold feet and dumps me.
What?
So that was the sensation
on the train.
On the train, yes. And the sensation of the ground I was standing on, like crumbling, uh-huh. Disappearing, vanishing beneath my feet.
Did you throw him off the train?
No, I did not. I think, very honestly, I was in more of a shock than I was angry or sad. Like mm-hmm. I just could not believe this was happening. When people ask me, you know, when I decided to leave that life and world behind and do something else, the decision to do that by myself was actually then a decision I took on the train.
So later in the interview, I asked Emily, why did she consider turning around? Because she's only a week out into the trip and just going back to Sweden and continue her life. And she tells me that, you know, she had set the wheels in motion. And the wheels in motion is going forward. And going backward wasn't a wheel in motion. And she went on and went on to Africa. And she started the Saga, which helps local handmade crafters sell their products over to the world. And one of the cool things that she does is they melt weapons and they turn it into jewelry as a statement against violence. Mm. And it started from a boy who dumps it on the train. Mm.
And now she's melting down AK-47s. Sounds about right. Right, we've actually come to the end of the session then. What a wonderful show we've had so far. Of course, it was the Enterprise 2017 look back. Some really great clips we've had today. I think the one thing that I can kind of take away from this is that, first of all, the Mike Horn one really, really touched me. And to listen to somebody describe his life in that kind of way of like, look, I know I'm not perfect, but this is what I want to do with it. And I know I can do this. And with the support of my family, I can do that. That's my takeaway from that. From Jeff, that's kind of made me look at the way in which I want to move in towards business. And I know that sometimes I have to fail, you know, before I can actually move on. Arvin, of course, anything to do with scary monsters, I'm all for that. Riding on trains, Majida, is something that I'm not fond of. But, you know, especially with you listening to what you've just said to that young girl, I'm not entirely sure if I could trust you to be sat next to you. And Christine, the stories and the clips that you had is the idea of like that whole state of mind is something that I think we can all take away a little bit from, right?
Yeah, I'd like to think so. You know, I think we are all just about kind of ready for 2018 to start.
Right. So what do we have coming up at 11 o'clock then, Frieda?
Right. Taking a leaf from Jeff's story on failures. This is a very touching story I had with Ashby Nimble's Hui Matthews, who decided to close her business as it is with her clothes and her running clothes and all that. And she actually wrote a blog about the five things she learned about failure. And that got shared. That got, you know, Vulcan Post did a story around it. And I thought, I really want to talk to her. And it's a very painful journey. And then, of course, she started the interview. And then, again, I seem to be crying a lot.
You have to stop this.
I know. But have a listen to that. That's happening in her vantage. And it's a great way to just, you know, look at 2017. And it's okay. You know, and failure doesn't mean you're a failure. It's just a pause.
Right. On behalf of the entire team and, of course, myself, Rich Bradbury, we're going to be moving on to some news in a few minutes. And then, of course, her vantage after that. And then at 12, it is Enterprise Biz Bytes. Do not go anywhere. This is BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.